So each summer, I step up to this pulpit and I share with you musings of something that I've been wrestling with or confused by. And I come to you again today to do the very same. And know that these are just my thoughts. Take what makes sense to you and leave the rest. We're all just finding our way here. Today I'm puzzling about the word grace. What is it? I know I've experienced it, but where does it come from? And who or what bestows it? And how do we receive it? Before I begin to unfold my thoughts about grace, I think it's important for you to understand where I stand theologically. Meaning, how do I understand this idea of God? The beauty of being a Unitarian Universalist is we get to define our faith in a way that makes sense to us. And then we are called to respect the beliefs of our fellow members and hold their faith up and support them in it. So I guess I'm asking you to do that for me today as I share how I make sense of the world. When I was younger, I used to use the word God to describe how I viewed the universe. But now I call it the universe. Maybe God is the universe, and the universe is God. Because you see, for me now, this energy, this spirit is so large, so connected to you and to me, and I see it running through all things, trees and plants and rocks and animals and water and earth. The Bible says that God is love. And I guess that defines for me that energy, that connectiveness that I call the universe. I believe that the universe wants us to live our best life. And it's always reaching out to us, always encouraging us, always loving us. For me, this energy is bigger than any religion, bigger than most definitions of God. And mostly because in my world, in my work, I see such connections to people and animals and to nature. The veil that separates us is often very thin in my work as a hospice chaplain. The technical name for this kind of belief is pantheism. It is the belief that all reality is identical with divinity. Since I feel this energy, this love that flows through all things, I confess that I see grace visiting me quite often. Maybe it's because in my daily work, I see families and patients who are so vulnerable and so raw that they've let go of things that they thought used to matter. Maybe the softening of the heart at end of life allows us to see and feel things that our hardness or our fear or our denial held us back from seeing. Our own Reverend Dottie Matthews shared a beautiful image with me that I still utilize in so many ways in my work. Today, I think it's fitting for the understanding of grace as well. Dottie used to invite us to approach one another with an open, uplifted palm instead of a closed fist. I see this offering as an opening to that loving energy that flows between us. And maybe you hold to a faith in something larger than yourself, or simply believe that maybe this holiness just is ourselves. However you view it, could grace be the offering and opening of this palm when we're with one another? The biblical definition of grace means unmerited favor from God. But we're Unitarians, so since defining God as an individual thing, let's avoid a fight, and we'll lop off that last part and just say grace is unmerited favor. When I was in seminary, we were often told to unpack a statement, so let's do that here. Unmerited, what does that mean? Well, merit means to earn. For something to be unmerited, it means unearned. We did nothing to receive it. So does that mean when we're sitting around doing nothing, Brian, maybe I'm binge watching Netflix and eating Ben and Jerry's, does that mean that grace suddenly falls into our lap? It's an image that sort of sticks with me. favor, did you know that favor is a noun and a verb? It can mean an act of kindness beyond what is due or usual, or it can mean to feel or show approval or preference, a preference. So if we say that grace is unmerited favor, it means that we are given or treated with kindness or approval for not having done a darn thing. Let me share a story of how I think I felt grace land in my lap one day. I had a patient whose family owned a car dealership, and I adored this woman. She faced so many difficulties in her life because of her illness, and she still seemed to find so much beauty in her days. She was one of the patients I've had who had cared about me too. She would ask me about my life and my kids. Often my patients are very wrapped up in their own challenges, and they rarely see me as a whole person. But this woman did. She did that with almost everybody. She showed unmerited favor to everyone. So sometimes when I'm having a lousy day, I like to do little acts of kindness for others. And to be honest, it's really kind of selfish, because when I do that, it lifts my bad mood and I feel better. So don't go thinking I do this all the time. It's just something I do once in a while. I'm not that much of a goody-goody. But an easy act of kindness to pay and to do is to pay for the person behind you at drive-thru if you're getting coffee. So one morning, I'm in the throes of an already bad day. I'm at McDonald's getting an Egg McMuffin and an iced coffee. And I see this car ahead of me is kind of beat up and rusty. A young girl is sitting at the wheel, and she looks very frazzled. I notice that the dealership logo on the car is from my lovely patient's family. Seeing that logo makes me think of her and her gentle and loving nature. And I think to myself, gee, I wish I could somehow pay for that girl's food. But she's ahead of me, so that doesn't really work. I look behind me, and there's a brand new Lexus with a lovely looking woman behind the wheel, and she doesn't look frazzled at all. And I think, well, the beauty of doing this is that it's a surprise. It's an unexpected kindness. I don't really know this woman, so maybe she's in need of some kindness. So I decide that I'll pay for the beautiful Lexus lady when I get to the window. Meanwhile, the poor woman in front of me is in her rust bucket of a car, and she's now digging around in the glove compartment and even digging around on the floor, and I feel like maybe she doesn't even have enough money on hand to pay for her order. I think of my beloved patient, and I say a little prayer to her about this woman. Eventually, she pays, and she drives off, and I pull up, and I quickly say that I want to pay for the car behind me, and the cashier laughs and says, "That's funny. The girl in front of you just paid for you." That's grace. To me, this kind of grace sounds like a component of love, or better yet, a component of unconditional love. Whoever is granting grace decides to love us, even if we are unknown to them, like this woman. She didn't know me. Or loves us even in our messiness, maybe because of our messiness. My work requires me to see a certain number of patients each day and to be with them in their struggles and be beside them in their wonderings. I like to be with them as they're near end of life to offer prayers and support. Since hospice is a Medicare benefit, there's requirements for me to meet and assess a patient and family's needs during a certain amount of time upon their admission to hospice. All of this together can make for very busy days, and days that may start out with one plan and then end up entirely different. I'm somebody who likes to know what to expect. I like to plan ahead. This is actually not a good quality for a chaplain. Because our work is all about being there when things get difficult. So lots of time, my nature is battling with reality. I get frustrated. I get anxious. And I'm in the midst of all of this, and often, so very often, Without any of my doing, a phrase or a word will suddenly spill from someone's mouth, and everything will fall away. Suddenly, unmerited favor is present, not just for me, but for the folks that I'm serving. And each time it happens, I'm pleasantly dumbfounded. Writer and liberal Christian Anne Lamott says that grace presents itself everywhere if we only have eyes to see. It's there when nature is barren and sloppy, not just when it's all tarted up for spring. She says that often people with the deepest insights look as ordinary as an old alcoholic or an annoying neighbor. They may look like Siddhartha or the Dalai Lama, but they can also resemble your bipolar cousin Ruth or Mr. Burns from The Simpsons. But I began to wonder about grace. Is it always present or just on occasion? Because to be honest, for me, that's how it usually feels. Like grace happens once in a while. But I'm beginning to wonder about it being there all the time. And I just fail to see it. What if grace is really a dynamic and working principle? In Ephesians chapter 1, verses 5 through 6, it says that grace is not some kind of ethereal blessing that lies idle until we appropriate it, that our lives can be driven and empowered by it. I like this, but I need to take this definition out for spin with my definition of the universe holding us up and loving us. Is the universe empowering us with grace all the time? And we are just too blind to see. What if grace is not a one-time event, but something we are always standing in? Christians will say that if we have faith in God, this is true. But what about us folks who need more than faith, who want scientific proof, or need to lean on reason? Biologically, if two cells from two different hearts are put into a petri dish, they begin to beat together in one rhythm. For me, this defines a very concrete way how this spirit, how this energy flows through all things. Could this be proof of grace in action? And if so, is it always present? I'm beginning to think that it is, but often I have my head down, and I'm so wrapped up in my daily troubles and anxieties that I cannot lift my head to see it. Is the universe waiting, holding out unmerited favor to us all the time? Maybe, and then again, maybe not. I can hear some of you saying, well, what about cancer and illness and suicide and hate and violence and war? Where's the grace in that? Well, I'm the first to say that there is no grace in those events. But I also will be the first to say that grace will come rushing in during or after those events. I suspect that each and every one of you has seen and felt this happen in their lives. Illness can bring a clarity that allows a family to come back together after years of discord. Hate can cause others to rush out in love and compassion to stand up and speak out for those who are being persecuted. And our grief and our sadness are softened by the grace and love of our community of caring that rushes in to hold us gently in our loss and remind us that we are not alone. Guess what? All of those things are examples of unmerited favor. Definition tells us we didn't earn it, but it seems that the universe and our circle of loving tells us we have, simply by being who we are. When I was newly ordained and at a new minister's conference at our UU headquarters in Boston, I was asked to share my good news. Most Christians would claim the saving grace of Jesus Christ and eternal life. But of course, as you use, we all had very different ideas about what was our good news. For me, it is that I believe we are all facets of this divine spirit that runs through all things, and we are the only one that can express this facet of the divine. So we must simply and gloriously be exactly who we are in our own fullness. Because you see, by being fully ourselves, that is how that facet of the divine is shared and expressed to the world. The facet of the divine that we hold shines through in our messiness, our confusion, our different way of being in the world. And here's the thing. Sharing our true selves with others is holy stuff. Holy stuff that we often try to suppress. But when we do, I think that's when we run into trouble. Denying who we truly are only leads to depression and anxiety and feelings of inadequacy and doubt. I think the biggest part of our work on this earth is learning to embrace ourselves fully and accept others fully. And just as I just said that, it occurred to me that is this another definition of grace? To accept another fully and unconditionally, just as they are. Sociologist and researcher Brené Brown says that she now understands to feel a true sense of belonging, we need to bring the real us to the table, and that we can only do this if we are practicing love for ourselves. For years, she thought it was the other way around, that if she did whatever it took to fit in, that she would like herself better. But it never worked. She needed to love herself first. What gets in the way and holds us back from showing up at the table with our real selves? I suspect we often get scared, we get anxious, we feel vulnerable, and suddenly grace seems to slip away from us. But I wonder, has it slipped away, or have we just begun to doubt it? I suspect that often we feel that we're not worthy of grace. And with that comes a turning of the head away from the sky or the greenness of the earth, and suddenly we're buried within our stories of fear and inadequacies, and grace slips from our grasp. Not because it's not there, because we choose to look away. We become blinded by our own perceptions of unworthiness. I don't think I walk this walk alone. I think I'm on a very crowded path with many of you who may feel unworthy or unable to see the grace around you. So how do we lift our head? How do we decide that we are worthy of grace? The best way to change the world is to change ourselves. Which often requires feeding and caring for ourselves with love and kindness. And sadly, we probably treat ourselves in ways we would never treat those we love. Simply must stop and offer ourselves grace and love on a daily basis. Maybe you do it by taking a yoga class or running or meditating or being with loved ones. But ask yourself, what feeds you? What restores you? I find when I'm feeling less than, it helps to do something sort of unexpected. Maybe go outside and stand under the stars, or go out in the woods or along the water. In our reading, Wendell Berry said, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things. Do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. Writer Lynn Twist talks about these feelings of not being enough that plague us every single day. For many of us, our first waking thought is, I didn't get enough sleep last night. The next one is, I don't have enough time. And whether this is true or not, the thought of not having enough occurs to us automatically, even before we think to examine it. We spend most of our waking hours and the days of our lives hearing and complaining or worrying about what we don't have enough of. We don't have enough work, we don't have enough time, we don't have enough love, we don't have enough money, we don't have enough power. Before we even sit up in bed or touch our feet to the floor, we are already behind, already lacking. No wonder so many of us feel exhausted, overworked, and overstressed. We are a nation hungry for more joy because we're starving from a lack of gratitude. And I think that grace and gratitude go hand in hand. In fact, the Latin prefix for grace and gratitude is the same. The Latin translation of gratitude is standing in grace. Lynn Twist says that addressing scarcity doesn't mean searching for abundance, but rather choosing a mindset of gratitude. Gratitude meaning a knowing that there is enough, and we are enough. Mindfully seeking gratitude for what we do opens the door for grace. Once we let go of that sense of scarcity, of not having enough, we discover the surprising truth. We are enough. Just as we are enough in our messiness and our brokenness. We are enough as this beautiful and fractured facet of the divine. Grace rushes in and we see we have enough. Holding this thought allows us to lift up our head and be present to grace that is waiting, just for us. Waiting in the quiet of a sunset, waiting in the peaceful flow of the river, waiting in the sudden perfume of lilacs in the spring, waiting in the open palm of a loved one. For me, this letting go of scarcity and fears of not being worthy enough lifts my head for me to see what is before me. I see the love and grace that surrounds me and my family and friends and community and especially nature. You and I, we're both standing in grace right now in this sacred place of love and support. This fellowship is a perfect example of grace, for we come here to love one another just as we are and to support one another with unmerited favor. Poet Mary Oliver says, you can have the other words, chance and luck and coincidence and serendipity, but I'll take grace. I don't know what it is exactly, but I'll take it. Lift your head, raise your eyes, and know deep in the fiber of your being that you are enough. Right here, right now, you are standing in grace. May it be so.